VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
I don't know, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Ruck. Only two more until Christmas. Thank you for making our numbers so enormous. We're delighted that so many people are downloading and listening to us. When we put together the panel today, we decided that we were short of a touch of glamour, and there was only one person we could bring in, that's Adam Hathaway. Like the Cray twins, he never crosses the river, but today he has come south from his North London base wearing the jacket, or at least the jacket is with him. A fashion icon, Adam. How many years have you had that?
About 20. I reckon it's been on about 15 tours.
Been on 15 tours.
Seen most grounds in the world.
It's gone out of fashion six times.
It's back in fashion now.
Come back in five times. Welcome, Dogman. Also, Sam Peters from the Sunday Times. Sam, you remember at the start of the season that Ella, his daughter, came on with him and was gurgling in the background. After that, we got a lot of people asking that Ella come back and don't bother with Sam. We've also got Danielle Waterman, dynamic England fullback, world champion, and unstoppable in her international retirement as she was when she was playing so magnificently for England. And she was only 2.5 hours late for the for the recording today. Welcome everybody. Danielle, just I think your first try of the season yesterday, we should come to that first. Where did you win possession and how far did you run? Just for Wasp Ladies against Worcester Valkyries.
Didn't have to do too much, actually. Our centre, Louise Dodd, nice dummy switch, burst through the line, I just supported, and then had to dash in my bright pink boots over the line. So,
okay,
yeah. So 20-metre dash, I reckon.
So it was an easy running then. So there we are. Nothing spectacular. Okay, well done. Yesterday, we saw the final of the fourth series of matches in the European Champions Cup. Yesterday was the day that Leicester Tigers were meant to make a big comeback against Racing 92. They spoke all week about a must-win game. Didn't speak loud enough. They got absolutely hammered. Adam, you were there. The game that was supposed to rescue their season has put them deep, deep, deep in the mire now.
Well, the strange thing was, I was also in Paris the week before when they finished quite strongly. And all the talk this week was, we've got to start like we finished last week. And they were 24-6 down, something like that, within about 25 minutes. They were appalling. They're as good as out of Europe. Genge was all right. He put himself about. Hooker was all right. Dan Cole was very, very quiet. Their back five of their pack is shocking.
The point is, Sam, how did they get to this stage? Because when you're a professional club, you're supposed to prepare not only for the next game but for the future. But as Adam says, there are some people in that back five and probably in other departments of the team as well which do not deserve to be called Leicester Tigers.
Well, absolutely. I guess part of this comes back to sacking the coach one game into the season, which was quite an extraordinary thing to do in many respects.
But are you saying that he didn't deserve to go, or he
should have gone last year?
Yeah.
And then at least allow Murphy or whoever it was going to be to take over to have a summer to at least get some of their own guys in and plan and put a team together. But, you know, putting a director of rugby in position, you know, one game into a season is hiding to nothing, really. And the questions really now going up to the top of the organisation and the board at Leicester, I think, are going to be under a lot of pressure.
Adam, Ben Youngs, the England scrum half, hasn't even played the last 2 weeks.
Been on the bench yet.
What's that all about?
Well, I can't work it out. They were all talking up Ben White after the game last week. You think if you've got the England scrum half in the team, you've got a must-win game, you'd probably start him. Is that logical? Or am I missing something?
Possibly. The other thing is that we should play tribute to Racing because they are really a very fine side and made 9 changes between the two games.
Yeah, 8 or 9 changes. I mean, obviously, they still played their big guns the brilliant Nakawara, Finn Russell and players like that. But they were miles better than... I mean, I'd have them along with Saracens, Leinster as contenders to win it outright.
OK, I think they must be. I think they've joined the other two now. Danielle, you took in two games. Gloucester on against Exeter when Exeter bounced back, as they tend to do. And also Cardiff and Saracens on Saturday, the game I was at. What were your impressions?
I think Exeter were always going to do that. And Gloucester suffered with Cipriani going off after about 30 minutes. And we just weren't clinical enough. And I quite enjoyed the Saris Blues game. It was good to see a team get into Saris. And you just wanted, there was one line out right on the 5 metre line where Skelton had been carded. You thought Cardiff were going to, you know, get over, go in the lead, and they got turned over, I think, by Jamie George. And that was kind of it. And there were so many, but unfortunately, there were so many penalties in the game that they were never going to keep building pressure. But they scored a couple of nice tries. And to keep Saris close for a little bit longer this week was good.
You're right about those attacks where they tried to get over the line, but in fact they were given a penalty from easy range for the current Welsh fly half, who if he'd kicked it would have put Cardiff in front with about 14 minutes to go. And the idea that they were, to me, that they went to the touchline, if they'd got ahead, the crowd would have got into it. It was a horrible day and they might even have done it. But as it is, Cardiff are back to the drawing board. Saracens drive on with Maro Itoje to add, and also Billy Vunipola. Also, we should say well done to Edinburgh. It's very rare for Scottish teams to qualify for the knockout stages, but they were very, very good form in Newcastle yesterday. They won very well. Newcastle, well, I think, lost three or four players during the game, but it was excellent. Do we think it's a vintage European Cup so far? It's interesting, but to me, it doesn't seem to be absolutely brilliant. Sam,
I think it's hard to comment on that after a weekend with such horrendous weather. I mean, I think it will get better and better. I think there's a lack of Premiership quality in there, if we're honest. You know, Saracens obviously are an outstanding rugby team in Europe, one of the outstanding rugby teams in Europe, but also by miles the best team in England at the moment. Exeter have had a really, really disappointing season in Europe again. It's a big blow. It's the first real setback for Rob Baxter. So, I think it's yet to capture the imagination, I think it's fair to say, but may get better in the spring.
I think it might be epic by the time we get to the semi-finals, because a lot of these pools are virtually done and dusted, apart from the, I mean, less to say they're still alive, they're not, they've gone. The Exeter Gloucester group is vaguely alive. The rest of them are dead as a dodo, to be honest.
It's a new degree of life. You're vaguely alive. Okay, just before the while our listeners are still vaguely alive, Danielle, the European Cup, in my opinion, it's under pressure from the two leagues in France and England, because they get so much money in that actually Europe in some ways is not a climax as it used to be. Am I being unfair?
I think so, because if you ask the players, I'm sure they love the challenge of playing different teams. And I think that's what's disappointing about all the English teams, is they're not playing how maybe we've seen them in the Premiership when they're coming up against an opposition that are new. That's where you see the exciting rugby, because it's not the same old clashes where we know that the, you know, teams are going to drive or kick or whatever it might be. I would say the players relish that opportunity, and yes, money is going to be involved in terms of the clubs and looking at what's important and bits and pieces, but I think it's great, and I'd love to see the women's game have a European competition of some kind.
Oh, well, especially with France, the French clubs being so good and so prominent.
Yeah. I think it would be cracking, and, you know, chuck an Irish side in there. I'm not quite sure whether, potentially, if you pool some of the Welsh teams, you know, they could compete. Yeah, I think it would be a really good opportunity to build on the women's game and to bring more opposition into the club side, because at the moment there is a real distinct divide between the top probably 5-6 teams and the bottom half of our Premiership.
Okay, well, in terms of the divide, we've had 12 rounds of the Tyrrells Premier 15. Saracens are top from Harlequins, from Loughborough Lightning and from Wasps. What you're saying is, Danielle, that possibly lower down the teams are not as strong as people would like?
Yeah, you've got Gloucester Hartbury, who are, I think, one or two points behind us, with Bristol Ladies in behind. But the problem is with those kind of, with our middle section teams, with a couple of injuries, you know, Bristol have got Amber Reid, Sarah Byrne, Langi Tuima out, and they've lost to Darlington Merlin Park, who, you know, there's no way they should have lost that fixture. Mm. We played Worcester this weekend and put a decent score on them, Waterloo the week before, and yeah, there is a big divide and it is a shame. Will we see more movement around the Tyrrells Premiership in not next year, the year? I think we have to with players. But to do that, you've either got to provide some kind of financial benefit or some lure to get them away from the top teams at the moment.
Just to, slightly more positive, Loughborough Lightning, you always want teams to come through to challenge the old order. They're in third place. And you were saying before we came on air that they saw what your Wasps team off pretty well. So that, I mean, that must have hurt. Part of you must have thought, well, okay, it's nice to have someone coming through.
Yeah, it's actually been really good to have that different dynamic. Katie Daly-McLean, I think, has been the signing of the year for them. She has dictated terms on every single game. When we played them up at Loughborough a couple of weeks ago, every time we turned the ball over, she punished us 50, 60 metres, which was challenging for us. They got into our 22 four times and came away with 28 points, so not bad statistics. But yeah, I think them challenging the top spot, they had a heavy loss to Harlequins. I haven't caught up on that game yet. But yes, yeah, it's a different dynamic and it's good to see them doing well.
But is it, are you still positive about the, surprisingly for you, you seem slightly downbeat, but surely you're still positive about the league itself?
Oh, 100%. I think it's been absolutely brilliant in terms of the level of the game this season. It's built on last season. We're finally seeing a in inverted commas, professional setup around the players. So we've got coaching, analysis, medics, S&C. All of that has been provided to the top 60 at each club. The downfall of the league is the fact that we don't have a geographical split of all the top players. And when some of the middle tier teams are losing their internationals to injury, or whether it be over the autumn internationals, they just can't keep competing. But in terms of the general club player, there's been a huge development. And we're also seeing lots of young players stepping up, which is a credit to the league. Someone like Tatiana Hurd, Karis Williams, both started in the centres at Twickenham against Ireland and did a great job.
Let's just go on to Tyrrells, because they've been tremendous sponsors. Now, I've got here, we can just do a little test here. I've got here two packets of crisps, one Tyrrells, and what a lovely bag and display it is. And the slightly inferior, in my opinion, crisps called Walkers, flogged by Gary Lineker. Now, we're just going to do a little test here. First of all, for crispness, I'm going to break a crisp the same distance away from the microphone. Just for here goes the Tyrrells. Oh, I think you can hear how crisp
very
that was.
Crispy, that was.
We now come to the Walkers crisp. Hardly anything there, a little bit soggy. So we're going to say just a quick taste test now. We can just give those round. Sorry, if anyone is allergic to anything, don't have them. But Daniel, for the everyone's Tyrrells, first of all, Daniel, what do you think? Outstanding?
I've got a mouthful, sorry. Yeah, fantastic. And actually,
unbelievable.
The only downfall I would say about Tyrrells, they don't do a grab bag.
Don't do a grab bag.
Don't do a grab bag, which I've noticed you've grabbed with the Walkers.
Yeah, well, okay, but anyway, some people think the grab bag is big, others don't. But Sam, Tyrrells,
taste-wise, as good as I've ever. No, it's definitely the best.
Do you want me to do the John Turow test on this? Look,
yeah,
MasterChef. Very good. You can feel the saltiness and the cheesiness. Yeah. And a nice English rose on the bag.
Now, frankly, I don't want to adapt your opinion anyway. I'm just passing over the soggy Walkers. what do you think?
Awful.
Yeah, awful, aren't they? Terrible. Look, with respect, it's only a personal opinion, but
underwhelming.
Yeah.
No, as we're going on about Tyrrells, I genuinely think their sponsorship has been a total game changer for women's rugby at the club level in England. It really has, because it's branded it, it's provided the finance, which has made it far more professional, as I've mentioned. And it's the first ever sponsor for women's standalone in England, which is really important. New Zealand got a few for their Black Ferns team, but yeah, they put their hand up and they've done a good job, and I think they've got quite a few sales at Twickenham, so they're not doing too bad either.
Well, the press are eating a lot,
you know. Game changer.
Just on this show.
Lineker, Walkers, how many games have you changed? Thank you very much for that. I think that was very significant. We're going to go on now to something with no levity whatsoever. Last week, Nicolas Chauvin, young Stade Francais player, died after an incident where he went into a tackle, broke his neck in the tackle, and then suffered a cardiac arrest. On Sunday, my colleague David Walsh in the Sunday Times, writing about this desperate incident, asked the question, is rugby now becoming a guilty pleasure, perhaps too violent for his own good? Now, we cannot put this incident down to any bad practice, bad tackling, or whatever, because we don't know enough about it. It's just a tragic incident. But Sam, whatever the reasoning, does this now coalesce growing anxieties?
Well, I think it's obviously a desperately, desperately sad situation, and our sincere condolences to Nicolas, to his family, and everyone involved at the club. I think what it is a reminder to everyone why World Rugby are trying to implement changes to the game that make it safer, and why everyone involved in the sport who loves rugby has a duty of care to everyone who plays the game to accept there is a very, very physical element to it, which we all love. Anyone who's played the game or watched the game loves the physicality of it. But there has to be a point and a threshold where you say, OK, well, this is now at a point where we need to change. And I think that has happened with World Rugby. I mean, we only have to think back, say, for example, to Formula One when Ayrton Senna died, and the really scientific analysis that was done around safety in Formula One and how it massively improved safety in the sport. And I think that can still happen. It's a work in progress with rugby. Lots has been done already. Things around concussion awareness has been exceptionally good. And more needs to be done. I think without changing the game radically, I think we can still have a hugely physical game which is safer.
Let me come back to you, Sam, at the very end and for you to tell us what the next step should be in your opinion. Danielle, you were noted for really aggressive physicality in the game and the way you played. I mean, I remember one of the things that turned people on to the women's game was when you hit that Australian winger three World Cups ago, and she still hasn't come down yet. But has it been become more and more fierce when you've been playing, because you've played at all the top level games, and have you been concerned about it, and are the players concerned about it? Or in terms of the women's game, let's just talk about that at first, do you think it's still within bounds?
I've seen huge developments in the women's game, mainly because if you move towards a professional era, you have the chance to become the best athlete possible. Therefore, you build bigger players that are more athletic, more powerful. The collision speed is therefore much greater. I don't think as players we worry about it. It's desperately, as Sam alluded to, desperately sad that this situation has happened, but it does happen in all sports. And, you know, I agree, World Rugby are doing what they're doing to protect players, but as somebody that's playing in the game, you know, I'm small, and as you say, I grew up with brothers, so I had to learn to be pretty physical from an early age. But I don't think it's something that's on players' minds, because it can't be. And these accidents happen, just like they've happened with a number of injuries that I've had throughout my career. And the one thing that I would say that is looking after players now is the sports science and the medical services that players have access to, in particular at the top level, but the education process around the head injury assessment, looking after young players, is being drip fed down into grassroots, which I think is also playing a huge part in supporting young people that are taking up the game. And we've got to look at the thousands that are playing, thousands of games across the world every week. And you know, this is unfortunately an incident that's happened, and is very, very sad.
Adam, everyone finds it as ghastly as the next man or woman, the fate of poor Nicolas. We've also seen, since the game tried to crack down and make safer, the sort of old pros and current players and wee hacks now and again thinking, oh God, the game's gone, because you see something like where there's sort of some sort of minimal contact and it's all accidental, but someone gets carded. We all put safety as a priority. Is there a kind of public relations thing that needs to be done, because you get these incidents that look so soft?
They just sort the referees out, don't they? In that respect, I mean, the players all love contact, as Danielle said. If you speak to Johnny Wilkinson, that's one of the reasons he played the game. just got to clamp down on the bad stuff, let the other stuff go. The one thing that does worry me slightly is that the lack of kids playing rugby now. Maybe they've been put off by what they see from professional rugby on the telly, when in fact they need to know that little Johnny's not going to be playing that sort of rugby on a Sunday morning, not getting smashed up all the time.
Sam, what's the next steps that should be taken?
Well, I think it's already happening in a lot of ways, in that what we're really now starting to see is the longer term education piece kind of filtering out through the game. And I think we see a lot more sensible commentary in, certainly on TV, for example, the Glasgow Lyon game. Etienne Oosterhuizen, the Lyon second row, was sent off for a pretty blatant elbow to the face of Hastings, and really good comments, which I think David Flatman said, this is not UFC, players know what to expect now. And I think as the education piece rolls out, the players will adapt their behaviour, and things that 5-10 years ago were completely normal, which have now been accepted as being completely unacceptable, will just go out the game. And so there's that part, and then just to continue vigilance and continued education, I think is a big part of it, I've got to say.
I'll just add a historical note there. In 1993, the game abandoned the principle of the team going forward at indeterminate rucks and mauls. They did not retain the ball anymore. In other words, it was turned over. Before that rule was passed, the field was clear of forwards. Forwards would win the ball, backs would attack with it. Mm. Immediately that law came in, the game went to two straight lines across the field, like rugby league. It became rugby league, and now you have to go bash, 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 bash to clear these people out the way and to make space. There are now something like four times as many tackles, some of them head first, as there once were. And the guys who changed that law put people in danger, even though they didn't know it at the time. You're listening to The Ruck. We'll be back in a minute.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Ruck. Slightly lighter note, much needed now. I know that you all send in criticism when we say which players are good and bad. Now we're going to go really berserk, and we're going to name all our World 15s as the best team we've ever seen, either with the naked eye or on television. Please write into the normal addresses and tell the other three how bad you think their teams are and how good mine is. Let's start with Adam Hathaway. We just need to go through, Adam, the backs. We'll all try not to laugh. The backs that you've seen.
Right, so my backs are fullback Christian Cullen, 14 Rupeni Thalthokunibaka, the Fijian winger, who's a monster, 13 Jerry Guskert, 12 Tim Horan, 11 Joe Nalomu, 10 Mark Eller, 9 Gareth Edwards.
You've got two correct there. Sam Peters?
15 Christian Cullen, 14 Jason Robinson, 13 Jeremy Guskett, 12 Philip Seller, 11 David Campese, 10 Jonathan Davis, 9 Huus van der Vesteijsen.
Danielle, we're going to ask you to do your women's team, but have you got any comments on those two frankly ludicrous selections going this scrum?
I don't think they've gone wrong. I think that's a negative way of putting it. But
thank you.
Growing up, my hero was Vainga Tuigamala. And I know Jonah Lomu was the kind of the more modern day version of that. And obviously he's going to be in there. But yeah, someone that I looked up to, I think maybe he would have been. Fine. He would have been nice to put in there.
Well, the real team. Fullback Chris Latham, the Aussie fullback, who was fantastic. Sadly, he didn't show up when he came over to Worcester. Gerald Davis is unshakable on the right wing. That maybe date me a little bit, but he was just magnificent. Jeremy Guscott, I think we've all had. My other centre is Frank Bunce. When Frank Bunce played for New Zealand, it was just hysterical. I've gone for David Campese because I think Jonah had a slightly short career. It's not his fault. Juan Martin Hernandez at fly half. Gareth Edwards at scrum half. So that was the official one, not the official team. That's my team. Vainga Tuigamala, what a good one that was. We forgot that. We'll just go on to the forwards now. Sam, can you give us your forward pack, please?
Forward pack, so Gethin Jenkins, Phil Cairns, Carl Heyman, Martin Johnson, Alan Wynne-Jones. I've got Parisi at six, just because he had to be in the back row, but also so did Zinzan Brook at eight, and Michael Jones at seven.
Okay, you must be able to do better than that.
If I'd have known we were allowed to swap around positions like Eddie Jones does, I'd have done a different pack.
Well, it's called a cop-out. It's a cop-out. Well,
Richard Hill played six, seven and eight.
Right, I've got Jason Leonard, Sean Fitzpatrick, Graham Price, Martin Johnson, John Eales, Richard Hill, Michael Jones and Sergio Parisi in his proper position of number eight.
Okay, we'll come to Daniel for any favourite fours we left out in a minute. My team, Gary Pagel, European Springbok and European Cup winner with Northampton. Fitzy, I've always gone for Sean Fitzpatrick, so I'm not going to meet him in the next few weeks because I got Mario Ledesma, who I think was just a force of nature for Argentina. Olo Brown, second row, no Martin Johnson, sorry. Who have I gone for? Hathers. 10 out of 10 in the second test in Pretoria.
Simon Shaw.
I thought Simon Shaw was absolutely wonderful. Also, Patricio Albacete of the Pumas in the second row. Back row, two Welsh flankers, Dan Lydiate and Sam Warburton. Number eight, in his proper position, Sergio Parisi. Any forwards we missed out then, Danielle?
No, I'm in agreement. I think definitely Parisi at eight, like what you can do from there. I would say Sean Fitzpatrick at two.
Okay.
So I'd slightly disagree with you.
I think the Dan Lydiate one might challenge a few, Steve.
Okay.
Including me.
Well, we're not doing this to make popular, are we?
No.
I missed something if I am. Okay, now we're going to go on to, first of all, Danielle's women's team, the best team that you've played with or watched. Now, if you're leaving out friends, you needn't say anything, okay? Or there might be
it was really tough. I've literally put three players per position, I think.
Okay. Well, let's start at fullback. Now, there are some people in this studio who would say probably you. You can pick yourself if you want to.
I know. It's torn. Jessie Tremoulier, World Player of the Year this year. She is such a nonchalant player, and she, you know, but she glides around the field and has one of the best kicking games in the world. I think, yeah. But she's closely marked by Salika Winniata, who plays for the Black Ferns.
Okay, so that's good. That's good. Me. That's a good start. I've got. Also, someone I used to love watching was Paula George, former England captain. But wings?
Lydia Thompson is, in my opinion, the best finisher in the world. Scored a hat-trick at Twickenham this autumn. And also one of the nicest people I know. Loved playing alongside her. Portia Woodman is an incredible finisher. But still need to learn the game defensively, and that's a big part of me. So I'm going to say Kim Shaler, who played for England back in 2006 era.
Good. Well, I would always remember Magali Harvey for the try she scored for France on the wing in the World Cup where England won it. But also I always remember in the Holland World Cup, Vanessa Coutts being absolutely brilliant for... But I'll take your word for it. Fly half?
Katie Daly-McLean is cracking, but I'm going to say Anna Richards, mainly because to win five World Cups, I think you've got to be doing something right. And I think she was about 43 in 2010 when she played and still unpicked us. So, yeah, I think Anna Richards has got to be there.
So if you can still play in your 43, Sam, you could ought to make a comeback.
Young pup.
Centres.
Kelly Brazier is one of the hardest players to defend because she can run, she can pass, and kick tactically unbelievably well. Mm. Rachel Burford, cracking defender, and always put the ball in space. So I've got three for two, and I'm going to put Emily Scarrett in there as well.
Okay, yeah. No, fair enough. You got well, Sam copped out with changing positions. So I think Emily, why on earth they put Emily to fullback in the World Cup final, I've no idea. But that's not to be too controversial about these things.
Again, I've got two. Kendra Coxage is in fine form. Brilliant, brilliant player. But also Amy Turner.
Okay. Well, mine's go back a little bit before that. The first time I ever saw a women's game, Emma Mitchell was playing. And God, she was absolutely brilliant and remained so. Okay?
Yeah, I agree with that.
We're disagreeing there, but only on grounds of sheer age. Front row.
Rocky Clark, legend of the women's game. Fee Faumasila, the Black Ferns captain, who's just recently retired. And I've gone for tight-haired Aldora Tunu. She's an absolute wrecking ball.
From New Zealand. Right.
Played in the World Cup final and just destroyed us with her ball carries.
Okay. Well, that's a bit scary. Mm. Second row.
I've gone a bit old school with this. Lisa Burgess from Wales. She's actually my training partner when I lived in Cardiff. Great woman. And I'm torn between Tamara Taylor and Abby Scott. But we're going to, yeah.
Okay, I think Tamara Taylor is just a force of nature as well. Lisa Burgess, that's a great selection. And the only other wing I had was Debbie Francis from the first World Cup. She was absolutely brilliant. Okay.
Even before my time.
Okay, all right. Let's go on to the back row.
Georgia Stevens at six, Maggie Alfonsi at seven, and Safi Ndiaye, who plays for France, at eight.
I've got two of those. I thought Claire Molloy of Ireland is quite good.
Yeah, Claire Molloy and Romain Ménager.
Yeah, Romain Ménager. Yeah, played in the last World Cup. Also Helen Clayton, I always thought was tremendous. Okay, that's our World 15's done. Please tell us where you think we went wrong, if you dare. Because I thought we did pretty well there. Okay, just referring to the World 15s, Jeremy Gascott and Maggie Alfonsi, we think, made every team so and across the eras, and quite right too.
Can't tell Maggie though.
No, don't worry, we can't tell
quiet.
Jerry either. Don't worry.
he would also have had himself in.
Yeah. My team is Jay Gascott. Okay, I tell you what, the great journalists. Would we pick ourselves?
Yes.
Adam?
Probably not.
Could you actually manage a journalist 15?
Oh, easily. I've played for the Rugby Writers many times. I think I was quite good.
Didn't you cause a fight at Leicester once?
I hit the wrong bloke, yeah. I hit Malcolm Fulks-Arnold. We were losing 86-0 at the time. And God, I wish I'd never done that. Anyway, we're going to go on now to God and Goddess of the Week. This is someone who's been so outstanding in a certain sphere, any sphere, that they deserve our ultimate weekly award. It's always the chairman, i.e. me, has the casting vote. But we're going to go to Adam first. God or Goddess of the Week?
Jack? I've got a few, actually. So when I was on here about 3 weeks ago with Michael Liner, he had 50 Gods of the Week, which were the entire Ireland squad, the Ireland management, and all the support stuff. Well, I'm going to have about 100,000. Just my Gods and Goddesses of the Week are anyone who attended a rugby match in person on Saturday, which was the most filthy, horrible, disgusting day of all time. There were kids crying at the stoop on set. It was so cold.
They just read your match report.
Just read the people.
And dragging their dads back home at half time. Adam Jones was the only bloke wearing shorts in the ground. The scenes at Glasgow on Saturday, appalling. It was raining cats and dogs in Toulouse. In Leinster, half the ground was empty, A, because the match was virtually over and Leinster was so far ahead, but because the people in that far stand were getting absolutely hosed on and retired to the bar at the back. So anyone who attended a game at any level, extra B game or whatever, you're a hero and a heroine.
Okay, that's 28,000 Gods of the Week. That's really narrowed it down a bit. Danielle?
I'm going to say Laura Keats, who tight head for the Red Roses. I think it was about 8 weeks before the 2017 World Cup scrummaging ruptured her Achilles. And after 18 months out, she came back and played yesterday. Played 20 minutes, was absolutely knackered afterwards. But she had the biggest smile on her face. And I think any player coming back, in particular a tight head, in particular your Achilles tendon, having done it in a scrum, mine is 1,000,000% Laura Keats. But also I'm going to say thank you very much, Adam, because I played in the weather, so I'm going to take that.
I didn't mean to play as well. Listen, I tell you what, Laura Keats, I saw her at the last World Cup with hardly walk. There's so much bandage on. I felt really sorry for her, and it's fantastic that she's back. Sam?
I know it's probably against the rules to name family members, but I'm going to name my mum, Jenny, who, as many of you, or some of you know, because you mentioned at the start of the show, Monday's normally daddy daycare for me with my daughter, Ella. But mum, Jenny, has not only moved house with my 75-year-old dad in the last couple of weeks, for the first time in 43 years, unfailingly and without any hesitation stepped into the breach today to look after Ella, and she does that regularly, and I'm eternally grateful.
Well, and she's put up with you for 43 years.
Just the 40.
What am I supposed to do now? I can't knock back your mother.
She's terrible. I'm not going to comment on that.
You put me in a terrible position.
Depends how much you want him back as a guest.
In that case. Okay. My God of the Week is actually Gareth Anscombe, the Cardiff fly half. When he came over from New Zealand, people thought, what on earth has he come 12,000 miles for? And fair play, he stuck to it and played very well for Cardiff. I'm afraid this week I've got to have a joint, because I'm so impressed by Laura Keats to come back, but also Jenny too. So if Laura and Jenny, you've never met, wouldn't mind sharing the award as the goddesses of the week. I think those are two excellent ones. And at Christmas, it is not fair for me to judge. Finally, Adam, I just want to ask you, all three of you, it might be the last time you're on the pod this year. In fact, it could be the last ever for a couple of you. But Adam, your ambitions for the year. You've written this season for the Sun Mirror Times, Sunday Times, Telegraph, Observer. You've been on the podcast, the Evening Standard, the Cabell Clarion, the South Wales Argus, the North Wales Argus, and the Mid Wales Argus. What ambitions have you got in terms of new ground for your King of the Freelancers this year?
I want to get a byline in the Lahore Times on rugby.
Okay. I think it's a shoo-in. Danielle, you've got something out the way in that England have played in your absence. Okay,
yes.
You've got so much. You always played as if you had a lot of adrenaline. Are you dealing with the surplus of adrenaline that you've got because you can't wear the red rose anymore? And how many times have you almost said, I want to play again?
I haven't done enough training to deserve being that white shirt, but it was very, very difficult over the autumn to watch the girls. But at the same time, saw lots of new girls get their first caps, which was really exciting for them, having coached a few of them and been at the start of their journey. To be fair, whenever I have done any media, stood in front of a camera, I think my heartbeat was going faster than it ever did when I played in the white shirt. So, yeah, new challenges, which I'm really excited about, and definitely give me the nerves and the worries to perform and to do well in those.
Well, all the best to you. Sam, a slightly grave note, you were seen as the outstanding journalist in terms of rugby safety. And you've kept the campaign going for many years at a time when actually it was unfashionable. Do you see your campaign paying off and the effect it's had on other people? And are you up for the fight this year? It's a massive year for rugby. Are you still up for the fight to keep rugby safer?
I'm always up for the fight, Steve, definitely. I think, we talked about it before. I think there is a sort of, there has been a sea change, I think, in attitudes, and people have seemed to respond to what I've been writing about potentially for 5 or 6 years now. I don't think it's seen quite as bonkers as it was back then, but obviously there's some teething troubles and it's going to take a while to sort of iron things out. But I'm hugely encouraged by the way the sport has responded. I think there's a lot of sensible, same people, believe it or not, in rugby who are looking at this really closely and change is happening, and that's all good. The sport can move forward. I'm confident of that.
Thanks to everyone listening to The Ruck today. There's another programme next week on Christmas Eve. It's been a delight today. to have Danielle, Sam, and a relative delight to have Adam. Thanks a million. Stick with us. Thanks for putting our numbers up. We'll be back with you soon.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.